animosity towards each other right away too. So it's just perfect.
Yeah.
Great, man. So,
a certain animosity is what's
needed. It is. True, it is.
Yeah. All the best.
Okay. Goodness. Okay. Is it running?
Maybe. Yeah.
Okay.
See, I like to sneak up on you, but it doesn't always work. I know. Work.
Well, this is the 23rd edition of Western Thought.
More than that, it's 34th or something.
Really?
Oh. Yeah.
Really? And I was mentioning to Jonah, I was mentioning to Sydney how smart I was to realize that great art can be anything. It can be a poem, a short story, a novel, you know, anything. And Sydney said...
But can it be an Instagram post?
Okay, now say it once more louder.
But can it be an Instagram post?
Okay, now say it like you're in a play.
No, wait, hold. But can it? Can it be an Instagram post?
Yes, it can.
It sure can.
It sure can. I think, exactly, I think it can be. So, who has been gathering up these Instagram haikus?
Well, it's mainly quotes and...
Okay, wait, when was the last time you were on Instagram? It hasn't been quotes since, like, 2016.
Zero times. Zero times I've ever been on Instagram.
Really? Yes.
Yeah, zero.
That's okay.
Yeah.
It's mostly, like, vague fragments of sentences now.
Okay. So not even... Okay.
And that's why it could be an art form. All
right, so give us an example of a vague fragment of a...
I'll quote one.
Okay.
This person does not like me anymore, but... The last Instagram post that they posted had a caption that said, completing nefarious activities safely. And I think that's a prime example.
That's a wonderful haiku. That's
yeah, wonderful it's actually haiku. Pretty good.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
We're
expecting you to pull out something much more banal or boring, but yeah. But
that was the good thing, see, the reason we elected him producer... Sydney is that he knows how to pronounce these words.
Is it
banal?
Yeah? Am I wrong? So this is how we made him producer. So we are going to move on to William Faulkner.
You've gotten so much better at this.
At the request of our producer,
okay,
Jonah Andrus.
So here's what I'm going to try to do. Which is, I really want to set aside my prejudices. I really want to try to understand why he is great, what people like about him. It puts way too much pressure on you, but I want to open the floor to what you have to say about why Faulkner is great.
The really wonderful thing about this podcast is he gave me a day's warning.
Yeah.
I'm going to start with the first is tremendous rhythmic language.
Okay.
Two, his real insight into what America is, North and South, and how deep and bitter and cruel and unjust and crippling it is. No one else, not even black people, have been able to like bring out, because he's a white man, so he's bringing out, he knows the white people are this fucked up, right? So he's got that sociological view of really what reality is in America. And then he's a great writer and a great poet, and the third one is gosh darn it, what confused me, I was going to go back to the Instagram, and the reason that's art is there's just a certain amount of ambiguity in that line, which is an attribute of art, right?
Yeah.
And that's an attribute of Faulkner as well, tremendous amount of ambiguity all the time, you know, you're just kind of...
Really?
Oh, sure, yeah.
Ambiguity?
Well, because of the complexity of the relationships he's trying to bring out, you know, between either, you know, three rednecks in a truck or an old black woman and a lawyer, right? There's so much there that he's bringing to bear confrontations between people that are so complex, and he's doing it as best he can. There's always going to be this.
But where does ambiguity really exist, though?
Well, ambiguity it exists as a background, just like dark matter in the universe. I mean, it's like there all the time.
Right.
There's ambiguity, and are you kidding me? Right now, we've never met Sydney before. We're sitting here. She hasn't met us. There's a tremendous amount of ambiguity right now. And we're all happy with it.
You're much more sensitive.
But it creates energy. Ambiguity creates a heck of a lot of energy, man. If you accept the ambiguity.
Go for it.
So
when you're talking about ambiguity,
yes.
The ambiguity is what? It's just the acknowledgement that there's something more beyond mm-hmm. what's being said.
And right.
To even acknowledge that there's something more, you have to place value in what's in front of you. So the real question here is, what made you inherently place value in Faulkner?
That's exactly right. And just to sidestep for a second, that's the first choice a really good artist makes, is what is he going to foreground, what's he going to leave out? That's the mm-hmm. first thing, that's the first thing you decide. So what was your second question?
Perhaps just describe the environment where you first interacted with his writing. Was it you just choosing to read this book? Did someone tell you it was great?
God damn, I'm going to take the night off and just let her do it.
I know. I know. I'm telling you, this was a lucky, lucky darn day for us. I never read Faulkner until somebody I really liked said, "Absalom, Absalom is the greatest American novel." And I went, "Oh, okay." And that's the one where for the first 40 pages there's not a paragraph indentation, and each one of those starts with a sentence and is followed by like 25 subdominant clauses with their own subdominant clause until you get somewhere and you go, "Oh, okay." If you do it, you can follow it. I mean, there's nothing sneaky about him. I mean, if you follow every word of his, you'll experience it, and it will all make sense to you. And I think the one thing I read was, I was trying to find it, I don't have it in the shop, was As I Lay Dying. And it's got basically dramatic monologues by the three family members of the family.
Yeah.
Where Mama's going back and she's going to die and she wants to be buried, right? In her home around her kin. And one of them is, I think it's Darl, is talking about watching his older brother, that's the stud, it's the James Dean, beautiful, athletic, right? Taming a stallion that doesn't want to be tamed. And it's just like probably these three pages, the greatest writing I've ever read, of the purest English high romantic poetry I've ever read. I was going to read it tonight. So anyway, then I went back and I read Absalom, Absalom, and the other, as just to end what I was saying, the one everybody talks about, The Sound and the Fury, it's just like his weakest thing. I mean, he was trying a stylistic thing, and it's really not that good, so he never wrote like that again. So it's kind of ironic that that's the one everybody teaches, because it's so experimental, you know. I mean, it opens with a mentally disabled autistic kid describing things using like five or six words, right? And it's like, wait a second. This is not working, but...
Yeah, okay. But could you possibly understand why this argument you're presenting is not very compelling?
Why? Where?
I am just not compelled by him. I find it romantic of a time that not only is long past, It's you barely remember it.
It is not long past.
It's like
it's here right now.
But that's not to say that being old is bad. I mean, there's tons of old books that anyone can look at. But Faulkner has this romanticism of people with guns going out shooting game and
right.
going to the fishing hole, and they catch 20 fish, and it's like, well, yeah, there's almost 8 billion people on the planet anymore. That doesn't exist. There's human beings occupy 93% of all the biological life.
Mm-hmm. And that's what he's lamenting. Yeah, that's what he's lamenting is the that time is gone. In the South, it's still here in Idaho, but we'll see. You know, that's going to change too.
What's the argument here is whether he's relevant or has value now or did have value, what impact he made, what are we
exactly so
discussing?
Exactly.
Well,
so
I mean, it's all those things, but fundamentally to me it's about that he's not as honest as other writers, because he presents everything through the context of this familial Southern family.
Mm-hmm.
And he never inserts himself into it. Like, you never see him in there anywhere. It's always just...
Good point, Jonah. He doesn't.
Yeah.
That fucker. I can't believe that.
I wrote a thousand
pages in which I write it in the eye.
And you are,
and yeah. I'm in it at every point. Okay, I'm just going to read a little bit from Go Down, Moses. And this is just very, very brief. So the lawyer is sitting there, and the old black woman comes in, and only his collar seemed impervious to it, though by appearance she should have owned in that breeze no more of weight and solidity than the intact ash of a scrap of burned paper. A little old Negro woman with a shrunken, incredibly old face beneath a white head cloth and a black straw hat, which would fit a child. Beauchamp, Stephen said, you live on Mr. Carruthers Edmund's place? I done left, she said. I come to find my boy. Then, sitting on the hard chair opposite him, and without moving, she began to chant. Roth Edmund sold my Benjamin, sold him in Egypt. Pharaoh got him. Wait, Stephen said, wait, Auntie. Because memory recollection was about to mesh and click. If you don't know where your grandson is, how do you know he's in trouble? Do you mean that Mr. Edmonds has refused to help you find him? It was Roth Edmonds sold him, she said. Sold him in Egypt. I don't know where he is. I just know Pharaoh got him, and you the law. I wants to find my boy.
Okay, so there's like an allegory about how, you know, slavery, control of people is related to this hierarchy that's related to ancient Egypt.
No, I'm just saying it's pure poetry. It's just like fucking every
what
word.
What about
is like,
that is poetry?
It's better than my Last Duchess. It's like, boom. I mean, every word is in place, and the compression of the emotion is just so great in it. Just in like.
Okay, summarize the story. Summarize Go Down, Moses.
Well, believe it or not, her grandson is connected to the Sutphans through a slave girl, and is what is part of the Sutphan, which you learn by reading Absalom and all that.
See, his whole over. Over. You say it. Get close to the moment.
Oh, that's perfect. I was going to try, Sydney.
I speak French.
No, it's very good.
It's oeuvre.
Oh, God. I was just going to say. Oh, I was just. Oh, my gosh. I thought I was just going to say oeuvre.
Les oeuvres.
Oh, God. Sydney, you're
that
hired.
Close? No,
you're hired. I hope you don't have an agent.
I actually don't have a job either. If you could actually hire me, I just want something like 2 hours a day.
I don't know.
$15 an hour?
Well,
that's all in, right?
Yeah. That's a good artist.
Yeah,
right,
yeah.
There.
God, yeah. Exactly.
Two hours a day.
Work for nothing, yeah.
I need to spend the day with my dogs. I'm sure you understand.
We'll bring your dogs next time, would you?
I would love
them. They love it in here. This is like dog heaven here.
Is it?
So anyway, basically, Will totally works on emotional compression, both in painting, music, and literature. And that little scene has got the characters, it's got the compression, and then it's just got this stuff that you just, you know, wait a second, Pharaoh, what's going on here, man? Pharaoh done sold Pharaoh. I mean, it's like
No, this I'm, is like I'm past with you life. On the compression
so,
thing.
So it's really...
Faulkner is not a compressionist. I mean, he's got...
But he
like,
can
his
be.
Works are expansive. I mean, there's... I mean, compared to, like, Joyce Carol Oates or somebody, he's written as much as any fucking person ever has.
Right, right. And I a mean, lot of it isn't very good.
Well, I'm just saying he's not a compressionist at heart.
Right. Well, see, again, we get into... help us, Sydney. Is this... ethics is, or is it aesthetics? To me, beauty must have the pain of truth in it. It's got to have it. I mean, I'm not at all interested in anything that is like pretty or cute or nice rhythm or whatever. If it doesn't have something, you know, about being alive and suffering pain in this world, I'm not really that interested in it. And Faulkner has got that in spades. All his stories. And if you read As I Lay Dying, you get to the end of it, and I mean, I wake up in the middle of the night. I don't think I'll ever read anything long by him again. I would wake up in the middle of the night thinking of that girl saying, "Dad," because she's gotten some money, she's saved for money so she can get an abortion, and he needs some false teeth, and he knows she's got money, and he's the father, so he's going to get it from her. And I wake, like I say, people don't realize Faulkner has scenes that just go right to the very bone of the bone. And I wake up in the middle of the night just thinking of that scene and thinking, fuck you, William Faulkner.
So he embodies guilt in some way? He's like, he's a guilt writer of some kind?
He's talking about the real stuff, you know? And you talk about whether... you talk
person.
About that's relevant right now. You know, there are going to be little girls in... not that abortion's good. Obviously, it's horrible. But there are going to be girls, you know, thinking, okay, I'm 15 years old and pregnant. I'm going to have to go to fucking L.A., man. Or, you know, and that's not... can't
or
be... can't,
die.
Or die. Or fucking die.
Sure.
So that's pretty relevant.
Yeah.
That's pretty relevant.
But at the same time, what blinds me from even, like, experiencing what you're experiencing in this text is the terminology, the time period, the position that the woman is in, the, you know, calling someone a Negro woman versus a lawyer, someone who's being described as the color of their skin and their gender versus their career. Like, it's so hard for me to even want to enjoy this text because of the scenes that are brutally honest. Because, you know, I've grown up in a sensitive time, and that's just part of who I am. So I don't know if that contributes really to the difference in opinion that
mm-hmm.
could be surrounding the book, but
mm-hmm.
that's what I feel.
Right.
Well, no, I don't know. I mean, I think there's...
Okay. They're going to no longer teach Paul Gauguin in art history because he painted, you know, Polynesian girls without any clothes on. Okay, now I'm with you all the way on that, Sydney, but they're not going to teach one of the greatest writers
in the history of the world.
I
think it's weirdly opposite. Okay, I completely disagree. He's one of the greatest writers in the history of the world. Completely disagree about that. Look, okay. So here's the thing I need to categorize in my mind. I need to understand. When I go to the Idaho State University Library and I look at all the people who have written about Faulkner,
mm-hmm.
which is literally in the thousands,
mm-hmm.
if you go look at their collection, the people who have written reviews and essays and talked about Faulkner is more than every other author. Maybe that's an Idaho thing. Maybe that's an Idaho State University thing. Maybe that has something to do with... But it is completely unfounded that he is that good.
This is...
That he deserves
this
all
is,
this...
Oh, God. You realize, Sydney, this is the most unkind cut he could make. Because, yes, the whole idea you as an artist know, if you just paint really spectacular paintings that nobody can interpret... The academics don't want any part of you.
Right? He's too interpretable. This is what I hate about it.
Yeah.
He's too interpretable.
So I'm saying, that was a good cut, Matt. That was a good cut, and I hate that. He requires interpretation, and other writers don't.
And I fucking hate that. If you're going to be a writer, write something that's cuts to the quick, you know, like that tells you who you are. You know,
to point something out at the, well, further to the beginning of this conversation, you called his works, what? Abstract? What was the word that you used? There's more to discover there. You said they were dishonest, and you said they're open to interpretation.
Oh, right.
You need to discover.
Right.
So what's the difference?
No, I never said that. I finally got into that when he said that, why is he read so much? Because that's the whole academic game is, if you do art, it's got to, you know, if somebody can't interpret it and write a paper about it and get their degree, etc., then you don't matter. And you're right, the more interpretation an artist needs, you know, it makes you sellable and more people are going to read you because the teacher's going to say, okay, you got to read Faulkner because I can interpret it for you. Right, or Rothko, right. But I don't see it as a barrier at all. But like I say, I didn't even know that about Faulkner, and so that was really wonderful, Jonah. That's why we have him on the program. That's why we're going to renew his contract next year.
I really. Okay, so I sit there and I look at all these books and I'm like, okay, maybe it is the race thing. You know, maybe it is that he explored the racism from this point of view, but he really just laid it straight out and it left this room for people to just see things clearly and try and interpret it.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's why he's popular. But that argument also doesn't make any fucking sense because why wouldn't it just be, you know, straight up black people writing books? Why wouldn't you just write about them?
That's what I'm saying.
You know, like, if it's...
Why aren't those popular?
Yeah, well, I mean, a lot of them
are. But you two do not realize that he drank a quart of whiskey a day. He was never seen sober. And he died when he's like 60, and he was like a tough guy. This guy is a fucking drunk, man. And
this is the part of Faulkner I like. The mythology of Faulkner. That's the part of Faulkner I like. But the actual writing.
Well, he writes like a drunk, man.
No, he doesn't.
Oh, he doesn't.
He doesn't.
I could ever write if I wasn't drunk. Just saying. I'm not a writer, and I don't know how anyone would do it.
So. Well, yeah. Well, you're a painter. You need to keep a steady hand. So. Yeah.
But to even like explore situations that are completely, I mean, not your own, and develop characters, like, doesn't that process it require dissociation to a great degree?
I mean, I agree, yeah. Yeah.
God, it does. That's fantastic.
It does, yeah.
Okay. Soon now they would enter the Delta. The sensation was familiar to him.
I don't know if this
don't fucking interrupt me, you motherfucker. You fucking get out of line, I'll fire you, man. That was a North Dakota. That was a North Dakota hoot there we heard. That's how they laugh when like they see like 150 steer die out there in a blizzard. They go, you should see them cows trying to get up. Okay, I'm going to start again. I'm just going to read one paragraph. Because I was doing the southern accent so good.
Well,
I'm going to do
it. Try harder.
One paragraph. My ex-wife would do that. I would go down and visit her. I had an ex in Texas. And she said, you know, if you do that southern accent, I'm putting you on the plane, you're going straight back. No nookie for you. And I still did. And I would not be served. Those fucking Texans would not serve me.
Really?
Right.
Even if you were trying? It's kind of like in France.
The women would. good. Pick
like,
up.
Just trying. Yeah.
Yeah. Hard is real hard. I've been looking real hard for where the whiskey is over here. And they look at me like,
well, your
fuck
accent's,
you, man.
Yeah, well, yeah.
We're going to take you out back, boy.
You sound like a British guy trying to do a...
That's what she said.
Yeah.
And Ben and Palmer told me that, too. He said, don't do it.
It must be true, then.
Well, I'm still going to do it, though. So this is a short paragraph, Sydney. Soon now they would enter the Delta. The sensation was familiar to him. It had been renewed like this each last week in November for more than 50 years. The last hill, at the foot of which the rich, unbroken, alluvial flatness began, as the sea began at the base of its cliffs, dissolving away beneath the unhurried November rain, as the sea itself would dissolve away.
That one I felt more emotion from, and I wasn't paying attention to the words, because normally when I'm hearing someone singing or reading something, mm-hmm. I pay attention to the key.
It's interesting, when you first came in, you said, what kind of painting do you like, Will? And I said, you know, landscape or whatever, and you like landscape. That's a landscape. It gives you the feeling of the Mississippi floodplain, and yeah, and then he gets into the past of it, you know, and the Indian graves, and but it's a beautiful style, man. It's really
beautiful.
I can
feel more in that last paragraph that you read, probably because there's less controversial terminology in there, honestly. I don't think it's wrong to acknowledge that it's hard for me to continue to listen to someone when they say things that make me feel bad.
Right, sure, yeah.
And I think that I was able to recognize more clearly
right.
his skill of writing.
But you got a blind spot here, because when you are with assholes in a bar, and they talk like this, and if you are to report what they said, you have to report what they said. All else is lying and dishonesty.
Yeah.
That's just the way it is with writers.
Or you would completely miss their person by being blinded by a certain term they use in one situation, even though they don't actually care that much, you know? Half the time, they're just using it as like it's almost a kind of laziness, really.
No, they are using it to pose. You're right.
Yeah, it's
what I'm saying, that even the poser reveals himself by his pose.
Yes. Yeah.
So literature is different, and you have to get by this. You're not going to be able to read anything if you can't get by this. And I hate to say it, that in my novels, I write what people I heard say. Because that's who they are, and I don't like them at all, so I'm going to write the way they talk. You know, that's just the way it is. That's
well,
the difference
between
literature.
Well, that's pretty much the good parts of your novels, is your ability to recreate other people's things they say to you. That's your genius, is the in a weird way.
Thank God, that's the first time he's ever said something nice about my writing. He said nice things about me personally, but yeah. But anyway, yeah, because I believe that so much, you know. That's so yeah.
I think you make a good point in that, and yet, is it worth feeling bad to understand someone, to understand a situation
yes.
in an era?
Yes, it is.
Is it worth like reminiscing on something awful coming from someone who, like, did he really belong in these situations that he was writing about?
Well, it's part of the plot, see? The part of the plot in my novels is these people are part of the plot, you know? These ranchers,
well, go back
know?
To Faulkner. Go back
okay,
to Faulkner.
Let's go back to Faulkner. Okay. Where?
Does he belong in these plots that he's writing about? Is he the one who we should really attribute to these?
This is exactly my argument.
I think you met her on
He doesn't belong.
I think you met
in
her in
the
a bar.
Stories he writes.
I think you met her in a bar and you said, "Tomorrow you're going to innocently come
impossible.
In and buy a couple of books, and Will's going to immediately fall in love with you, and then he's going to invite you to sit out, and then we're going to just kick your ass."
That would have been amazing. It's like that idea behind the conspiracies. It's like when people
I never believed these conspiracy theories, but now I'm beginning to believe. It could happen. Yeah.
You know.
No, I'm with you all the way. But again, like I say, I don't look at Goya for anything that's going to make me feel good. And that's a good point. Joe and I have actually covered this in previous Western Thought podcasts. How much sadism, how much great artists have sadism. They don't care whether they make you feel really bad. And they have the skill to bring it to your, and make you feel bad, right?
And I enjoy that as well, but there's something different about this, just because there's that lack of belonging.
About
right?
what? About what?
What about what?
What you said about this.
I mean, about the sadism aspect, about, like, feeling bad and about having evocative art, art that makes you cry, art that makes you think or be depressed for a few days. I think that's good art, too. But I want to, like, know that the person it's coming from deserves my feelings for their works. I don't know if that even belongs in this conversation.
So they're gonna like get down and kiss your knees or something, make you feel good. I'm being serious. I'm not being ironic at all. Usually I am when I'm trying to be funny, but I'm not trying to be funny. You know, I mean.
No, it's a good point.
I'm not with you at all on this.
Which artists and which writers are deserving of our torture by the works that they're making to torture people?
Well, I mean, part of it is how much you yourself are willing to be tortured.
That's true.
There's a way you cannot be tortured by reading a single fucking word. I mean, it's a word. I mean, you can easily blow past it. You know, like, why should it bring up these emotions in you by reading one word? Look at this fucking bookstore. There's a trillion words, you know, that people have put in different combinations, in different styles. Why should a single word... And if it does make you feel something, that should be the exact moment where you go, oh, that made me feel something.
Is that why you feel so differently about Faulkner's? Because you choose, like, hey, it's just a word, I don't have to feel what I'm feeling about this?
Well, no. No. I think he'd probably agree with me on that, but no.
That's... No, there are a lot of N-words in Faulkner because that's the way the white trash talk. Mm-hmm. And I'll lay some else out for you, and you're not going to like this at all.
Okay.
I'm a really fine musician. I fingerpick, really good rhythmic player, been playing for a long time, hang out with really good musicians, and they've taught me a lot. And so after that explanation, I forgot what I was saying.
But that's good to know.
Yeah, it's good. You don't remember where you're going with that?
I can't remember. We were talking about something. I can't remember what it was, so it doesn't matter.
I lost the core of the conversation as well. And right. I'm going to go home to my dogs, but I thoroughly enjoyed this.
It's fantastic, Sydney.
Thank you.
Yeah,
fantastic, yes.
Come by again sometime soon.
Well, I don't know. I have the same problem with Faulkner that I have with a lot of other writers is super dialogue heavy. Just really dialogue heavy. I mean, not a lot of, you know, this omniscient understanding of the characters, just them saying things about themselves and never knowing whether they're speaking correctly or not. It's, you know, maybe they're just talking out their ass, whatever. I mean, and that's fine when you're just hearing it, you know, like with the podcast medium or whatever.
Right.
But you're going to bring out some Musil?
Yeah, yeah. We're going to go into a real modernist, right? Because he's
the
totally
true modernist.
He is totally concerned with himself.
Yes, that's what I like about him.
Thinking over his time up to that point today, Ulrich might shake his head in wonder as if someone were to tell him about his previous incarnations. But his third effort was different. An engineer may understandably become absorbed in especially instead of giving himself up to the freedom and vastness of the world of thought, even though his machines are delivered to the ends of the earth, for he is no more called upon to adapt the daring and innovative soul of his technology to his private soul than a machine can be expected to apply itself to the differential calculus upon which it is based. It's tremendous.
I love Musil.
It's tremendous, man.
He's so good.
It's tremendous.
I've been really getting into him. It's pretty fun.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's the opposite of Faulkner.
Absolutely.
I mean, they're literally the same age, probably. Or not probably literally, but pretty damn close to the same age.
Mm-hmm.
And he did something completely different from what Faulkner did.
Yeah.
And I think Musil defined literature much more than Faulkner.
Well, he does,
ever could.
So we have a little sidebar here. Will, after hanging out with old Jonah for like 7 years now. Jonah is into the understanding of who a human being is, and if they place themselves at the forefront of the narrative, quite honestly, right?
Yeah.
And say, okay, here I am, here's what I'm thinking, here's what I'm doing. And I agree with you completely. It's the most honest writing there is, you know, in a way. And you're not using any a flim-flam. You're not using any fireworks or anything. And but there's not a hell of a lot of observation of other people.
Well, yeah, but if you want to use fireworks, you might as well just read Chandler, you know, rather
No,
than
I like that fireworks. Well, I that's really spectacular because you're seeing...
Okay, what do you mean by fireworks then?
He's saying, what is the essential problem about being human?
Yeah.
Well, exactly. Yeah. You know, for a man to understand himself is like the machine being able to understand the trigonometry that designed him.
Yes.
I mean, it's, like, yes. It's not going to happen, man.
Yeah, it's never going to happen.
Yeah. But his personality and his wit is right at the forefront.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just a wonderful writer. Here's Robert Musil.
Here's Tim Musil.
And Arthur Dolson told me it's Musil.
Musil.
Yeah, Musil.
Musil. Yes, well, these pronunciations are fun, but, yeah.
Yes, so we went from Faulkner to Robert Musil. And do you want to read some out of that?
Well, no. I still want to figure out Faulkner. I feel like that, you still care about him. When I came in, you declared him the best writer of all time.
You like to take a cynical view.
Okay, this is
he said with a smile, as if Ulrich's remark about the bureaucratic administration of religious faith had only just been allowed to come to his attention. And I dare say my wife is not unjustified in fearing to count on your support, despite her sympathies for you as a cousin. If I may say so, your views on your fellow man tend to be on the bearish side.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
Yeah.
So there was some dialogue.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
And it's funny.
He's great. But is he a little bit harder to read than Faulkner for you?
Much easier. What an excellent term for it, Ulrich said, clearly pleased.
No, don't. Okay.
Even though I'm afraid I don't quite live up to it. It's just wonderful.
No, it's great, but you keep backtracking. You think Faulkner is the greatest writer.
Oh, sure, yeah. I do. I do, because race is the big thing in America.
And you think he tackled that better than anybody else?
He did, because he was enmeshed in the white power structure. His great-great-great-grandfather was a colonel in the... was a planter. He knows the people. And just like me, I mean, I'm so pleased that you like some of my dialogue, because in a way, growing up in Idaho... and being a white guy, so to speak, even though I've got Turkish blood, rednecks like me. I don't know why, but they do, and I get along with them, and I listen to them.
Well, speaking honestly is always good, and yeah.
Well, I'm just saying that that's why I like to write about it, because yeah, they talk to me. They tell me what dickheads they are,
yeah.
And I don't immediately get all upset like Sydney.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I just go. Yeah, I laugh a lot of the times.
Yeah.
I mean, they say some things you just can't
believe.
Well,
maybe women have a larger responsibility or something, or they feel like they need a larger responsibility to.
I think it's a sickness in this fucking generation. I mean,
well,
you cannot, you know, as a therapist, you cannot judge people if you want to find out how to help them. You can't let them know. And dealing with rednecks, if they're basically good people, if they have not had a good education, if all they know is how to fix cars...
Well, sometimes,
or plant corn.
Yeah.
You listen to their stories.
Yeah.
They've got stories. And so, yes, we've gotten to the very core.
I'm in
Jonah, you are the best interrogator. Here's the point. Faulkner and I have the same personality. Same personality. We basically are pretty nice guys, and we want something better, but we can go into any bar. he could go into any bar in Mississippi, and I can go into any bar in Idaho, and I can, they'll think I'm one of the greatest guys ever, because I'll laugh at their stories. And when they use the, and when they use bad words and insensitive words, I'm, it's not like I'm going to laugh, but it's not like I'm going to get up and throw beer in their face, right?
Except you're the only person I ever know who's ever been kicked out of the Atomic City bar, so I don't
know. Jonah! I do! I could sense that. I could see how I was skating out into it. Well, I was stoned, though. And I've been hanging out with Steve Round, for God's sake, for like 4 hours drinking and getting
really stoned. Well, in any case, I think you make an interesting point, but, you know, I don't know.
The only guy to get kicked out of the Atomic City bar. I didn't get kicked out. I pretty much ran out of there. I did a preemptive exit.
A preemptive, yeah. Which is, yeah, which is the real way to get kicked out anywhere. Is, yeah. No, but I think, okay, you were talking about it being like a sickness, right? Like a sickness of that generation, maybe my generation.
She's younger than you are. Oh, no, she's probably...
I think she's younger than I am, but... Yeah.
I do. I can't handle it. It's just so fucking self.
But maybe there is a point to sickness, right?
There is.
Like, maybe being sick has a function. It's not good, and everybody who watches it is like,
God,
oh, okay.
You always come up with these great goddamn lines.
You know, it's like, okay, that's a little sick, but...
They do have a moral stance that's admirable, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it has some attachment. Well, you know, now it's hard to, I was going to say the immune system, but it's hard to talk about the immune system.
You're going
to
make a metaphor out of the immune system? I want to hear it.
Well, I just think if there is that version of sickness, which I think there is, as you pointed out, is people responding too much to these things that hurt them, right? That's what she said.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why what I start rambling about and probably drove her away. Mm-hmm. But as soon as you start responding too much to the things that hurt you,
mm-hmm.
you forget about the ways that you can respond yourself. I mean, like, it...
Absolutely.
It becomes this self-recursive... Well, I don't know.
You're exactly right, and again, it's a moderation. You want to maintain your own personal integrity, but you know, you've got to. Don't get me wrong, and I should have told Sydney. I mean, if somebody were to gratuitously just, you know, start with a paragraph of expletives about women or whomever, blacks or whomever. Yeah, I'm with that all the way, but Faulkner's not that way. He's writing this way people talk, and that's what I told her, is that people in my books talk this way, and that's my role as a writer. But it's not like it's my main thing. It's to hurt her feelings, right?
No, of course not.
And
yeah.
And like I say, the main interest of Goya is to make you want like, not sleep for nights. So. There's a big difference, and
well,
but
how
still,
much do any
there's
of us...
only one Goya, and no one else has ever had the courage to paint like that, and that in itself is justification for himself as being one of the great painters, you know. And
how much do any of us let our feelings be hurt? How much of it is on us?
Well, absolutely.
About letting our feelings be hurt.
Right.
I mean, okay, they're your feelings, right?
Right.
I mean, letting them be hurt, isn't that on you? I mean, how is that on the other person?
This is an interesting analysis. Is there a binary operation here between the female and the male, because the male learns, you know, when somebody crowds me, it doesn't hurt my feelings. I'm just spend like 24 hours figuring out how I'm going to deal with him next time I see him, because it's not going to happen twice, right?
Yeah.
So it's, he has dented my, he hasn't hurt my feelings, but he's dented me, and he's not going to do it again, right? So, I mean, ideally, it's like, fuck him. But no, personally, no. If it's somebody that I'm going to run into in a, you know, at the gym or somewhere else, I'm going to deal with him next time. So I spend 24 hours thinking how I'm going to grab him by the neck and break his neck or something like that. Ludicrous. And then I laugh, because that's the secret life of Walter Mitty, right? We all know that's true. But still, I have to process through that, and I'll be waiting for that person the next time. And of course, he's waiting for me, because he knows I'm going to react to him. So he's always gives me the big smile and, hey, Will, how you doing, right? Yeah, you chicken shit motherfucker. So yeah, there's that. But the female is like, doesn't have that immediate, you know, fight response that we've got. And they react to it differently, you know. Boy, we're going to get a lot of calls. We're going to get a lot of input from this.
Yeah, from the 50 people that listen to our podcast, yeah. There's going to be a lot of call-ins from that.
If we could just have one person say, take Western Thought off the air. Just one.
We'd be up to 1,000 views. Yeah. Just a little bit of controversy. It's like the Barbara Streisand effect, right? Yeah, it's like her. Somebody posted a picture of her basement, and then nobody looked at it. But then, as soon as she put up litigation about shutting it down, then you know, millions of people looked at it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's really interesting. But it is true. I mean, women are receptive. She's a very, very voluptuous, feminine woman, and her natural, she's just not, she can't fight. I mean, you can't fight with a baby on your hip, you know? That's the difference, man. It's just like 100 million years of, yeah, it's really tough, really tough. But yeah, I'm with you all the way, and we could get in really big trouble with a hyper feminist if we said something like this, that men basically are become better artists because they are not afraid of conflict and of getting their noses busted up and doing it right.
Yeah, yeah.
And then of course for every man like that, there are at least 100 women that will do it too. So no, I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying the essence of living is you cannot be too receptive. It's like, okay, I'm going to kick some ass right here, really now. And it's really true, man. And it's an element of delusion. But wow. It works, man. It works. And we're both Scandinavian. We're both Norwegian. The berserkers. It's hard to deal with somebody that's fucking crazy, that is only half your size is going to kill you. They scare the heck out of you. You know?
Yeah, just seeing that look in their eyes.
Just seeing that, man. Yeah. But I don't have it in my eyes, but that's why I wear dark glass all the time, because nobody can see my eyes. They don't know how fucking crazy I am.
Yeah, yeah. You could be crazy. I feel like we're coming back to the first podcast we ever did. I feel like this is something we talked about.
Right.
Where, yeah.
Really? You remember?
Well, I don't know. It's just a guess.
Right.
It's a deja vu.
Hey, look. Why don't we have... A lot of our work is in Western thought is extremely interpretable. We need somebody to fucking interpret this stuff, Ed.
Yeah.
Go back. What was
help
the first?
Us out.
Help us. Yeah. Just interpret us. There, what are you trying to
but
say,
Joe? You can't get a PhD. You can't get a PhD.
You could.
Well.
Hey, no. We're a phenomena, man. We're a damn phenomena.
Yeah, and there's no better way to be a phenomena than saying you're a phenomena. That's it's like those people who are super into aliens. They're like, yes, I spoke to the aliens. I know everything about the aliens. Let me tell you.
Their hidden agenda?
I know.
Again, interpretation. Yeah. Big deal, man.
Yeah, interpretation does matter.
You know, and they got a word for it. Hermeneutics.
It's a good word.
From Hermes. It's not what the message is. It's how do you interpret the message. Those darn gods, man. They're always like doing these interpreted messages. Yeah, I love it, man. That's the essence of literature, man.
What is that story about hermeneutics?
Hermes was the messenger of the gods.
Yeah, I remember that part.
And I actually wrote a poem about it. And one of my great unknown poems was, you know, it's not the message that the gods give to you. It's how you interpret it. This is a real problem. We got a real problem here, man. And so you've always got people interpreting the message of the gods.
So are the gods giving you what? They're giving you allegorical messages?
Allegory, again, ambiguity. We looped it back to ambiguity.
What,
yeah.
Why wouldn't the gods give you a very distinct,
exactly,
very direct
go message? Down the street, buy that
turn
lottery,
right.
Turn right. Yeah, exactly. Why don't they do this? This is the way the gods work. You know, absolutely, man. And the Pythonesses, apparently they were above this cleft in Delphi, and there was a great snake down there exhaling this sulfurous, you know, fumes, and they would breathe it, and they would interpret what people came to ask them. And it was proven that many of their prophecies were right? Tiresias looks at Oedipus and said, don't ask me anymore. Don't ask me what you don't want to hear, buddy. You know, and Oedipus is the king, so he doesn't...
Yeah.
He doesn't... nobody tells him anything.
Is
so
there
great,
is
huh?
there any point that thing in Faulkner? That don't ask me what you don't want to hear? Does he have that mythological construct?
That's an interesting critique, and I think it's valid. Yeah, pretty much... Faulkner's style is the omniscient authority in all his work. Yeah.
Yes, but it's not omniscient, where he gives the characters a guiding hand.
No,
it's omniscient in the way that he is the god who is describing what those characters do
are going and what they're going through.
Yes,
right, and the hopelessness of it. Yeah.
The hopeless romanticism of it.
Oh, it's pretty hopeless, man. I mean, if you're half white and half black in the South, of course you're doing better than the black guy because you can get a job, you know, at a soda fountain. But, you know, sometimes it's easier just working in the fields than thinking you're a city boy and can wear nice clothes, you know, and somebody's going to, you know, knock you off the street or insult you at any time. But no, that's an excellent critique. I can actually agree with you completely on that. Faulkner's story is the story. There's a certain amount of mystery to it in terms of, but mainly he's Darwinian all the way, yeah.
And it's weird how that can coexist with the endless amount of interpretation and reviews that can exist about him. Because to me, when you cut yourself out of it, when you make it just about these characters, to me that's limiting interpretation. But clearly, to a certain degree of, I don't know, collegial interpretation, it actually helps, because now there's something to write about. But both you and I are both not in favor of these collegial
Right, right. Well, no, you brought out a really good point. And again, to go back to Musil, is that, I mean, he's in Hitler's Germany, and he's still maintaining...
Austria,
thank you. He's still maintaining this, and you're right, he could not have been writing like that in Germany. He lasted a little longer in Austria. But yeah, he's maintaining this incredible scientific objectivity, right? These beautiful epigrams and this wit and the beautiful wit. And there's not a lot of wit in Faulkner either, man.
No.
He's pretty much...
And that's what keeps me going is wit. Right. You know, it's like when I don't see wit, that's what I don't get.
Right,
that's
right.
What I don't get.
Right. But there's no wit in Caravaggio either. Caravaggio is just...
Yeah, but it's a painting. It's completely different.
Right, right. It is. But I'm just saying, you're right. But no, if you, you know, like if you look at Rubens or Velázquez or something, you'll see some wit in there. You'll see some irony. You'll see some some cool touches.
Talking about painting.
Little frivolousness. Yeah, Rubens, Velázquez, Bruegel. You're seeing wit. You're seeing some irony. You're seeing some humor. In Caravaggio and the Lyric of Caravaggio, there's none. It's just none, man. It's just all fucking death and tragedy. And what is about my personality? So to finish here, and why do I like Faulkner? To finish what I'm saying is that I just like the honesty and depth of his knowledge of all these people and how he just, you know, just kept doing it and just kept writing. And I just see, I see him as the only real portraitist of America. Now, a portraitist is not the greatest artist, I agree. But that's what he is. He's just saying, okay, this is what America is. And it's still there, man. It's still there. And you know what the real irony is? In Pocatello, I get along with maybe 1 out of 5 the black men in this town. What the hell's the problem, man? Do you want no irony? That's irony. I'm astounded that I've always got a really dicey relationship with black men. You know, because I'll say whatever I, you know, like, you know, this guy comes in here and I make with his wife who's white and I make the remark, he's looking, where's the history? And I said, well, World War II is there, and the black history is right there. As soon as I said it, I knew I...
You fucked up. You totally fucked up. Yeah.
I didn't give a fuck. I was not going to... Fuck it. Who cares, man? I mean, I'm not going to... So, I don't know. I just see some kind of weird irony there that... Gosh, nobody is more than northern abolitionist than I am, but... Something in, you know, the men I know that interact, man, we always have little, there's always a little friction there, and some of the biggest fucking men in this town I have trouble interacting with from time to time. And that bemuses me. That really does. That seems unjust, Jonah.
I mean, the question is it their fault or yours?
I see it as their fault, obviously, but I don't see it as anybody's fault, and anybody that... Okay, here's the point. William Faulkner perfected the Old Testament style in which the plot, the characters, the pathos, the pain is something that is like predestined, irrevocable, and will keep being repeated through time. And that's the essence of his style. It's like, boom. The river, the Mississippi floods the plain. You know, it's just...
Will
so
keep
that's,
being repeated through time?
Yeah, yeah. That's Faulkner's story. Yeah.
Okay, but yeah, but I think that's bullshit. I mean, well, why would anything...
Hey,
keep...
we now have, without white supremacists... the Republican Party would have no fucking votes, man. Well, at least 30% are.
Well, yeah, I mean, I just don't... I mean, I think in the grand course of history, I mean, I don't think anything's going to be...
The grand fucking course of history is like people are so crazy. this guy said he is in a plane of a bunch of fat fucking white men and women in MAGA hats, and they are chanting 6MNE. And somehow he knows. You know what the code of that is?
No, no idea.
6 million, not enough. In the plane.
What? Six. Like a commercial flight?
In a commercial. Well, it was after the. It was after January. It was after the riot.
Okay, okay.
They'd come to town to.
But isn't that about Jewish people?
Yeah. But exactly. There's no fucking difference, man.
Well,
I don't
there
care.
Is a there.
Well,
there's,
fuck, they can pick on me if they want. I don't care.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying this. This is the fucking crass, evil, banal. Sorry, how? What did you say it?
Banality.
Banality.
Banal.
Banality. I mean, these. You're kidding me. And he's like the only one there, and he's thinking, well, you know, I just want to get back home to my wife and kids and just get the hell off this plane. But can you imagine that? Never, you know, but this has always been here. And this is what I'm finding really interesting, Jonah. America right now is pretty much the way it was in the late 30s in America when the American boons, fascism was big. It was 50-50 Republicans and Roosevelt, but there were just so damn many people starving, they vote for Roosevelt. But and then Hitler invades, but there are just a lot of parallels there between how Trump was a good buddy of Putin and he almost got elected. Man. But anyway, I'm just saying that human beings that have no lives, that have no education, that are just basically kind of fractal evil zombies, they're all over this country, man. And it's just really, and that's what Faulkner talks about. I mean, in Delta Autumn, I mean, this guy's really a nice guy. The narrator's really a nice guy. He's an old man. And you, by the end of it, you see he's just a fucking idiot, man. He loves the wilderness. He loves the past. He loves his buddies. He's a good guy, but he hates black people. His nephew has fallen in love with a high yaller gal, right, in Memphis, and had a kid by her, and she comes to him, man, and he goes berserk, because he didn't think she's black, because she's so white, right?
Uh-huh.
And she tells him right up, she's black, and he goes crazy. And you like this narrator the whole time, man, in Delta Autumn. That's the narrator in the, you know, in the beginning that I read. It's beautiful. But the narrator is not Uncle so-and-so, but it slides into him very sympathetically. You see that the narrator really has the same feelings for the land and the disappearance of the wild and the old ways that this guy's got. And man, you get to the end, you just go, oh man, these people are really fucked up.
Well, I mean, shouldn't... Okay.
The people that think that put up with me and think I'm a great guy because basically I'm in shape and I'll kick their ass. They think I'm a great guy. They say hi to me, they talk to me. They also know I'm a writer, right?
Yeah.
And they want me to like them. Most of them are really fucked up, Jonah.
Well,
they think like this. And I smile at them and I'm just glad that I'm not fighting them. You know, I'm glad that they are settled down after I had to put them in their place.
Well, I mean, how much of that thinking is actually based in any kind of logical working through points?
Well, the working through points is most of them are Mormon, and blacks could not become priests because then they would go to heaven. And these white Mormons were not sure they wanted any black people.
Right.
Because you know why? Because blacks have such big dicks, right? You know, and they're wearing robes and stuff.
Yes,
they don't want any.
They all have giant penises. And all women love giant penises. That's the main thing they're into. It's just big penises. That oh.
all women, if they can take them, they're like, give me the biggest dick you got. Give it to me. I need the biggest dick.
And this would be in heaven.
It's kind of like...
This would be in the celestial kingdom.
It's kind of like guys with tits on a woman who are... It's just like she's just all tits. It's like she's just a big... She's one of those Polynesian goddesses that's like 90% tits.
I know. I know, man.
Well, but... damn it.
This is the true story. This is the true story. It's great, man. You're absolutely right. That's what they're afraid of. So, you know, if they're afraid of that, well, just go. You let them go, man.
Yeah.
You know, let them sell their cars, let them farm their lands, let them sell their real estate.
Well, I guess somebody's got to be afraid of something.
Hey, man, you're exactly right about that, but I'm not afraid of any of that,
yeah.
Any of that stuff. I consider myself enlightened. I just want to go to heaven, you know, and just be a nice guy, basically.
You think about heaven that way? You think about heaven?
Great intonation.
Yeah.
Great intonation.
Yeah, I was a little southern. You think about heaven?
No, it's wonderful, Jonah. It's absolutely great. Yeah. Oh, man. I just want to be a nice guy, man.
We can do a little bit of a William Faulkner short play at the end. Hey, Will. You think about heaven? What you think's up in heaven?
I don't think a lot about that, actually. I was just talking about being a nice guy and wanting to go to the gym and not have any assholes around. Well, I think a heaven is right now.
Is that what heaven is, Will?
Heaven is right now, Jonah, and, you know, hanging out with you and talking about fun stuff and talking about whatever we want and having Sydney in here, that was a little bit of heaven, I believe.
That was that little bit
I don't expect no more than that.
I never expect nothing more than that. Mm-hmm. I never expect nothing more than that. This is William Faulkner.
This is the best. If we don't get enough people pissed off at us for this podcast, Jonah, and raise our viewing level, I don't know, man. We might have to do a segment from Salt Lake City or something. I don't know.
Being hated is almost better than being liked, really, at the end of the day.
Yeah.
But I was going to close out on this idea, which was that... Oh, God damn it. Now I lost it. Oh, no.
I'm glad it happened to you.
Oh, too. God damn it.
Okay. Have a beer. That'll help you.
Yeah, that'll help. No, it was about... Oh, God damn it. We were just having fun in that last minute, so I lost it. Fuck.
So what was the theme of it?
Well, it was essentially about how... Faulkner and, oh my God, no. Our brains are so fragile.
We're coming up with so many eternal truths. So what was the theme of Faulkner contrasted with another writer?
Yeah, it was, no, I'm sorry, this is going to be boring. I'm not going to figure it out. I can't figure it out while I'm talking.
Well, we're going to edit it, so don't worry about it. Huh, interesting. God, I was all set, too. In closing, I have this great idea, man.
Maybe that's better. In closing, I can't remember.
But next month, gentle reader, we will have this